This past Sunday, the Houston Texans showcased their depth, winning a scrappy game against their division rival, the Indianapolis Colts, without star wide receiver Nico Collins, and then lost another star receiver in Stephon Diggs with an ACL tear. It's recently been reported that Diggs is out for the season. How does that impact the Texans' outlook? Rice football coach Mike Bloomgren is Bloom gone after dropping a game to the UConn Huskies for the second year in a row. Speaking of UConn, they'll be back at it next week on the basketball court, attempting to defend their back-to-back men's national titles and continue their streak of 35 straight women's NCAA tournament appearances, but we're here to answer your burning question. Do the Rice Owls stack up in this year's college basketball landscape? And how do the North Star High School Navigators stack up in the Nebraska High School football playoffs after making their second straight state tournament? All that and more coming up. You're listening to the first ever episode of Against the Grain on Rice University's very own K-True. Roll the music. Let's talk some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1 KTRU LP Houston and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
All right, good morning, Houston. My name's Ian Kleppinger. I'm here on our inaugural episode of Against the Grain, which is a new Rice student radio show right here on KTRU 96.1. We're going to be talking all about Rice athletics and Houston sports. We have a whole team of student hosts that you're going to hear from throughout this hour. I'm going to kick it off real quick for us with our first ever segment, which is called Around the Hedges. Here at Rice University, we like to say that we are inside the hedges and that the city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So we're going to go around the hedges and talk about a few notable things that happened in Rice athletics this week real quick before we get into some more in-depth segments later for you for the majority of the hour. So starting out, we had the American Athletic Tennis Tournament this weekend hosted at our very own George R. Brown Tennis Center on the Rice University campus. And Rice University men's tennis player Arthas de la Batissiere won the men's singles backdraw bracket. On his route to the win, he beat the number one seed in the backdraw and the number seven overall seed in the tournament out of the University of Memphis. In case you're not familiar, the backdraw bracket is kind of similar to a loser's bracket in other sports, but it's also not the same because you can't win and go back into the winner's bracket. So, but it's kind of the consolation in order to ensure that everyone is able to play a certain number of games so they come out to the tournament. So he dropped his first match to the number two overall team or an overall player in that tournament, and then went on to win all his games in the backdraw. So great performance from him after a tough first matchup. And Ratkovic, a women's tennis player for Rice, actually won the women's American tennis tournament. Her finals match was against Moeller from Memphis. Also, she won that 4-6, dropped the first set, and then won 7-5, 6-2. That match lasted almost 3 hours. And after that win, she gets to go to the ITA Masters Tournament in Rome, Georgia, which starts on November 7th, representing Rice and the American as a whole. So that's a big deal for Rice to be represented on that stage. And she is only a sophomore. So great outlook there for the Rice tennis program moving forward, having a conference champion in singles as a sophomore. Rice women's soccer has had a pretty strong season. They're 11-4-2, 5-3-1 in the conference, but they dropped two games this week on the road. They lost 1-4 against Memphis, and on senior day, their final home game of the season, they lost to the Charlotte 49ers, just 1-0. They have one more regular season game on the road against the East Carolina Pirates later this evening on Halloween, and then they have their conference tournament, which starts in a week or two and is played over the course of a few days. They're currently ranked third in the conference, so definitely some conference tournament hopes there. We'll see how the Lady Owls can continue to have success on the soccer pitch. Rice women's volleyball beat Tulane 3-1. They are now 13-6 overall and 8-2 in conference play. They've only got a few weeks left in their season. Their next game is Friday night at home, also against the Charlotte 49ers. We'll see if they can continue their success, having won their last two games, being 8-2 in the conference, and are currently atop the American Athletics Conference standings. The Charlotte 49ers, their next opponent, are dead last. So hopefully an easy matchup for them there. Would not want to see a loss, but hopefully they can continue their winning streak, carry some momentum into the home stretch of the season. With that being said, we got to talk about Rice football, who unfortunately dropped another game 17-10 to the UConn Huskies, and our Lord and Savior, Mr. Michael Scott Bloomgren, was relieved of his duties as Rice head football coach. So that's going to do it for Around the Hedges, and we're going to give you an in-depth breakdown on the state of Rice football from none other than Mr. Brandon Brachia and Garrett Lowe. Gentlemen, take it away.
Thank you, Ian. So with that, I think we just got to get right into the overview, right, of Rice football and the Bloom era as a whole. So after 7 years at Rice University, Bloom was sadly let go. He never finished a season above 6-6 with an overall record of 24-52. He went to two bowl games, not winning a single one. And he started this season basically at 2-6. So Garrett.
Brendan, we know the stats. We know the mediocrity. Give me a quick vibe check. How are you feeling about the firing, and how do you feel about the Bloom era as a whole?
So the Bloom era as a whole was obviously very disappointing, right? We have players that came in that were attributed to him, basically, such as Luke McCaffrey and JT Daniels. But at the end of the day, the results were not there, right? So you can bring in all these players. You can say you're a recruiting mastermind and all of this, but at the end of the day, there's nothing to show for it, right? Started this season 2-6, and for someone that was making $900,000 a year, I don't think the results were there.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. I mean, I do not feel bad for Bloom at all. Cashing a $900,000 paycheck every year is pretty sweet, and if I were going 2-6 and getting that check, I would be fine. My thoughts on the Bloom program as a whole are pretty mixed. I won't pretend to be a Rice football expert. I won't pretend to be someone that's gone to every game and watched the program closely. All I know is that last year, JT Daniels was a top 30 quarterback in the nation, without a doubt. Had he not been injured and forced to medically retire, he would have been at NFL training camps. He would have been in contention to make multiple rosters. Luke McCaffrey was an elite wide receiver one, especially in the American Athletic Conference. To do what we did with that roster and finish, 6-6, yeah. Brennan? Inexcusable. I think Bloom pretty much showcased his inability to elevate roster, elevate talent. So I am very happy to see him gone, and I'm looking forward to the future of Rice football. Speaking of that, Brendan, what do you think about our outlook on the rest of the season? I'll start you off this Saturday at the famous Rice Stadium. We play 6-2 Navy, coming off a tough loss to Notre Dame. What do you think about that game?
I think it's going to be a bloodbath. coming off a not great game against Notre Dame, right? They were ranked going into that game. They've been playing phenomenal all season, running the triple option like an academy does. But they've shown what they're capable of, right? Like, it's not like they even went out and just got slaughtered against Notre Dame. Like, there were certain plays and drives that they were able to put together that showed a competitive brand of football, right? Rice is no Notre Dame. So I think especially with their track record this season, they're going to come in and it's going to be ugly.
For sure. Quick rapid fire on the final three games. So you have us going 2-7 after a loss to Navy. We take on 7-1 Memphis on the road. Winner lost there.
It's a loss.
Lost there. And then we go to play 1-6 UAB. Is this our chance to win a game and get to 3 wins on the year?
It is definitely, like, of our remaining games, our best chance to find a win, but at a unfriendly environment in Alabama, I'm just not sure we're gonna be able to do that. Like, we have a new interim head coach, and I guess we're gonna see where he can take us and what we can do, and if we're able to get anything from EJ Warner or any of the other offensive players. But it's definitely going to be interesting.
Yeah. Bleak outlook for the rest of the year. I want to talk a little bit now about how attractive the job is as a whole, who we could be looking at as potential candidates. Brandon, do you have any thoughts on Rice football as a job? If you were a coach, what would you think about it? What would be your considerations?
Sure. So Rice, especially with our new AD coming in from Vanderbilt, has shown a commitment to put money and resources into football, right? Like, I think going forward, there's a clear path to being a competitive American Conference football team, and just having a competent athletic program as a whole. You see what he was basically able to build with Vanderbilt. While, yes, he transferred and came over to Rice, he laid the groundwork, right, for what happened. Just this year when Vandy upset Alabama, he built a winning baseball program. He just really did a great job fundraising and having money put in sports. And in a world with NIL. That's such a big part of it. And I just think that a lot of the slander, basically, with some of like the articles and like profiles that different news organizations such as the New York Times has ran on the coaching job, I think are quite unfair. I definitely think there is a path forward to being competitive, but I think we definitely need to bring the right guy in.
For sure. For those of y'all who are wondering, the article Brandon just referenced, written by The Athletic, they gave Rice's overall job grade a C as far as potential coaching prospects and how attractive the program is as a whole. Personally, I would disagree with that ranking. I think Brandon made a lot of good points about the AD, about the investment into the program. I think another thing to consider is in the new college football landscape with the 12-team playoff, the American Athletic Conference is probably top eight or so in the nation. Whoever wins the American Athletic every year will have a chance at the playoff, given that we're going to see a non-Power 5 team in the playoff every single year. I think that adds an extra wrinkle to Rice's program. I think that gives us a chance to land a higher level head coach. And I think overall the prospects for Rice football are looking a little brighter in the future post-Bloom era.
Well, absolutely. You take a look at a school like Tulane, right? Just a few years ago, they were a bottom feeder. They basically went from, what, 2 wins to winning 12 the very next season. So there's definitely room and places to improve in Rice football. So I think the outlook is quite bright. We'll see where it goes. But with that, I think we should take a look at the Houston Texans.
Yeah, so thank you, Brandon and Garrett, for that wonderful segment on Rice football. I am joined for this segment on the Texans and the rest of the NFL by my partners here. Brandon will be joining us again. We are also joined by Andrew Fox and Max Basurdo. So I guess I'll ask the rest of you, how do we feel about the Texans season so far and looking forward? We had some big news coming out yesterday about Stephon Diggs. He tore his ACL and is out for the rest of the season. But what do we think about the 2024 Texans season so far?
I think that overall it's been pretty solid. Like, at the end of the day, there's been close games, but they've more than often come out with the win. So I think there's definitely a lot of good in the season. Obviously, Diggs being hurt is a huge wrinkle in the mix, and something that definitely takes away from their ceiling. But I think that they've built on what they had last year. I think they're putting themselves in a position to be competitive and win football games, and that's the least you can ask for.
I don't know if I would have them as Super Bowl hopefuls just yet. To be honest, losing Stephon Diggs doesn't move me that much. I feel like at this point with Diggs, you're just getting a really nice route runner. He can't really stretch the field. He's not giving you a lot in terms of dynamic playmaking. I would be much more worried about the long-term health of Nico Collins. I feel like he's projected to be back maybe week 10, week 11, but if he's out for an extended period of time or they lose him again later this year, I feel their chances of winning any playoff games or even winning their division would definitely be in the way of danger. They're lucky they have a pretty easy division. They don't have a ton of super difficult games left this year, so they should be in a good position to win the AFC South and get an easier playoff matchup. But I think it really all just depends on the health of Nico Collins.
I think I'm a little disappointed with the Texans this year, especially in terms of CJ Stroud. I think he's fallen off quite a bit from last year. Last year at the end of the season, I felt like this guy's pushing top five, top three QBs in the league, but now his yards per game is down over 40 yards. His passer rating's much lower. His yards per attempt is much lower, and he's throwing much more interceptions. I think he is Texans football right now, and he's going to take them. His performance is going to take them as far as they will go. And if he's not performing as well as he did last year, I don't see them winning any playoff game at all.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew and Max there for y'all's insights as we speak on the Texans on KTRU 96.1 radio. So here's the deal, right? Julian, am your Texans fan on this segment. And I gotta say, this year and last year, I sort of created the foundation for this. The Texans are back. The Texans, for a long time, were one of the laughingstocks of the league. Obviously, there was a lot of off-the-field issues with ownership and star players. But the past year and this year gives a lot of optimism. We have a star quarterback in the league. We have lots of very great weapons. We have leaders on defense. We have a culture that has been set by D'Amico Ryans. We're looking up. That being said, the Texans are pretenders for this season, and I think it all comes down to, as Max was saying, this team goes as CJ Stroud goes, and I want to give you guys a blind comparison between two quarterbacks, one of them being CJ Stroud and the other guy being a mystery quarterback. So I'm going to present some stats, right? So CJ Stroud this season, as of week 8 before going up against the New York Jets, he has 1,900 passing yards, a completion percentage of 66.5%, an 11-4 touchdown to interception ratio, a quarterback rating just under 96, and 21 throws of 20 yards or more. Okay, pretty decent, not the elite numbers that you might be seeing from Lamar Jackson. Now let me bring up Mr. Mystery Man over here, right? So compared to the 1,900 yards that CJ was throwing, this guy was throwing for 1,800 yards, or has thrown for 1,800 yards, a completion percentage of 62% compared to 66, the same touchdown to interception ratio, a quarterback rating of a couple points less, and 29 throws of 20 plus yards or more, 8 more than CJ Stroud. Who is the mystery man? It is Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are in the dumps right now. And the last thing I want to do is compare my quarterback to a rival quarterback, especially when you are the quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars. But the numbers don't lie. CJ Stroud has had a down year, and it's a little disappointing considering the expectations we had from last year. I think the failure of the team obviously can come down to some key injuries to important players. We've mentioned Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs. I also want to bring up two names maybe people haven't talked about, in Azeez Alshire, middle linebacker. He was brought in to replace Blake Cashman, who's now with the Vikings. He was our leading tackler last year with over 100. The only other guy on the roster last year with over 100 tackles, Christian Harris, has not played a snap this season. And rookie Kamari Lassiter out of Georgia, he is allowing a team-low 36.7 completion percentage to opposing quarterbacks, and he has been out for the last couple of games too. Now, with three key games upcoming, starting with a bad matchup, in my opinion, against the Jets, elite corners going up against third-string, fourth-string receivers. If we lose that game and then lose the game against the Lions on Sunday Night Football, they're one of the best teams in the league. And then the Battle of Texas versus the Cowboys, that's always a big game no matter where you're at. If they manage to lose three straight, which is not likely but possible, they'd be at 6-5. Looking ahead at another tough stretch in December against the Dolphins, the Ravens, and the Chiefs, all in the span of 10 days. So I do worry about this team, especially with Diggs going down. It's one of those scenarios where past Texans teams weren't expected to be Super Bowl contenders. They were expected to win the division, kind of like we are right now. The difference is that the quarterbacks for those teams were what? Brock Osweiler, Ryan Mallett, Brian Hoyer. These are QBs that aren't expected to be the cream of the crop. So for Texans fans who have been with the team for the past decade, it's looking a lot like the same, especially if we can't solve our offense going forward. So, yeah. Any thoughts from the other three of you? Because I feel like I need to be convinced with some optimism.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to give you any optimism here, because the Texans' run defense has also really struggled this year. If you look at their total yards, it's not really much different, but I think that can be misleading since they're giving up over a yard per carry more than they were last year. And last year, throughout the regular season, that was their staple, was this stopping the run. And then when they got to the playoffs against the Ravens, they gave up over 100 yards to just Lamar Jackson and over another 100 yards to the other running backs on the Ravens. So I think that's another big concern for me, is that they've actually regressed in terms of their run defense. And if that's not fixed, how are they going to win in the playoffs against teams like the Ravens and the Chiefs, who love to run the ball?
Yeah, and ultimately that comes down to, I mean, right, when you don't have your leading tacklers on the field, right, that becomes a lot harder to stop the run. And it's Yeah, it's interesting to see just how like inconsistent the defense has played on certain points. But yeah, look, I suppose at the end of the day, this is essentially the same roster that we had last year going into the playoffs, the one where we had that blowout win against the Browns. There is some optimism, but we need those key players back soon. That being said, as we transition into the rest of the NFL, I'd like to entertain you guys maybe with a little bit of trivia, right? So we're going to play a little game called Who Am I? In this game, I have a player in mind, right? And I'm going to give the rest of you three clues to guess this active NFL player, okay? Each of you will get one guess, or I guess collectively, you'll get a guess per clue. If you don't get the player on that clue, I will move on to the next clue. Each clue should make it easier to guess the player. And at the end, if you have not guessed the player correctly, I will reveal the player to you. Okay? Once again, on KTRU 96.1. All right, we ready for the trivia? So, with clue one, I'm a current player, and I've played with Case Keenum, Texans legend, by the way, Khalil Mack, and CeeDee Lamb. Would the three of you like to converse?
I guess thank you for giving us Case Keenum here. I mean, he's not played for a lot of teams, has he?
He's played for the Browns, Vikings,
Rams,
Texans.
Yeah. Yep. H-Town. Any guesses from the three of you?
I was leaning towards Amari Cooper.
Amari Cooper?
But I'm not
sure. I'm leaning towards him as well. I think he played with Khalil Mack on the Raiders and Case Keenum on the Browns and then CeeDee Lamb on the Cowboys.
Yeah.
I think that's where we're going, Amari Cooper.
We're feeling Amari Cooper. Locking that question, that answer in. All right. You have correctly guessed Amari Cooper as the mystery player. Nice, I will just reveal the next two clues. Believe it or not, Amari Cooper has had 6 1,000-yard receiving seasons in his career best being just short of 1,200 yards in 2019 with Garrett Lowe's Dallas Cowboys. And he recently was traded to the Buffalo Bills. And the Bills themselves have had a quick little turnaround after a mixed start to the season. Speaking of turnarounds, as we transition to looking at the rest of the NFL, I want to bring the attention to the audience to the story of the season, which, in my opinion, has been the Washington Commanders. The Washington Commanders' turnaround has been the story of the season. The high-flying offense led by Jaden Daniels has been the face of their success, but Commanders and NFL fans ultimately have new ownership to thank. Can an owner really make that much of a difference? Well, let me tell you a little bit about a man called Dan Snyder, the infamous Dan Snyder. He was the owner of the franchise from 1999 to 2023. In these 24 years in his reign, they've had 10 different head coaches. That's about one coach every 2 years. Great way to have a stable franchise, eh? None of them had a winning percentage over 50% with the franchise. And we have other things like the stadium being on the verge of falling apart. During his reign, he had an interview where, when addressing the culture of the team, he said, "No, the culture is actually darn good." "Do you say so, Mr. Snyder? Do you say so?" Well, the fans did not agree, obviously. They grew to resent Snyder, and the Washington franchise became the laughingstock of the NFL. If the Washington football team wasn't a joke enough, right? But ever since he sold the team to new owner Josh Harris, who is also owner of the Philadelphia 76ers in the NBA and the New Jersey Devils in the NHL, the team has seen a pretty quick turnaround, as well as those other two teams, by the way. The Devils have some of the biggest stars in the league in the NHL, and the Sixers continue to make moves as they look for a championship. And obviously, we can point out the names on the field. We have Dan Quinn, who did make a Super Bowl with the Atlanta Falcons, lest we forget. Cliff Kingsbury didn't have a great time in Arizona, but he's known for being this offensive mind. He's helped with Jaden Daniels' development. And the man of the hour, Jaden Daniels. I mean, we talked about C.J. Stroud a couple minutes ago, but this guy is something special. The way he can use his legs, the way he throws the ball, his chemistry with Terry McLaurin, Zach Ertz, the offense has been really sharp. And they look primed to win the NFC East. And Jaden Daniels has already been in MVP conversations. I don't think it's crazy to say that. And yeah, the Commanders are looking to make the playoffs for the first time since 2020 when they had Taylor Heinicke lead them in a loss against the Bucks. So that is my story of the season. What has stood out to you guys about the NFL season so far?
So Julian gave us a nice little heartwarming story, you know, big surprise. Something I want to talk about is a huge disappointment. A former NFL MVP, Super Bowl champion, commonly regarded as the best quarterback in the league right now, and maybe on pace to be the greatest of all time, Patrick Mahomes. Although his Chiefs have a 7-0 record and are currently the top-seeded team in the entire league, Mahomes has thrown just 8 touchdowns compared to 9 interceptions. A little bit of a crazy ratio there. It's not a stretch to say he's really just not playing well at all. And although he's had a little bit of difficulty, there's been rotating running backs coming in and out. You know, his receiving options aren't the best. Travis Kelce might be getting a little bit old. I think it's still fair to ask questions about his performance this year. Potentially bring up, he's maybe getting a little bit carried by Andy Reid. I think the fact that the Chiefs are 7-0 with some of the teams they've played and he's playing like this, it says a lot about the roster around him, especially the defense. I think the Chiefs have had a really underrated defense for the time Mahomes has been there. They've always been, or at least in recent years, able to keep up with other teams. And I think it's just a very concerning look for him. I'm hopeful that he picks up his performances. I think if he finishes the second half of the year really strong, he probably won't be able to get into MVP conversations, but he could be looking at a Pro Bowl, something like that, if he plays well. But I think he really just needs to, for lack of a better word, lock in. Hope he can build a connection up with DeAndre Hopkins and really find his footing as we come into the playoffs in the second half of the year.
I think what's interesting, though, about Patrick Mahomes and, like, the entire situation that he's been in this season, like, despite not playing up to, like, his normal standards, right, they're still undefeated,
right?
They still haven't lost a game. He's still top 3 in betting odds to win MVP. So I think, is it really fair to, like, drag him through the mud? Like, at the end of the day, is winning not the most important thing?
I think that's a fair point. I mean, you can't really knock on him for winning. Obviously, his whole career, he's been a winning quarterback. I mean, he's won the biggest game now. I mean, he knows what it is to win. And I think as long as he keeps doing that, he'll stay kind of out of the light. He won't be criticized as much. But I think if you're Mahomes and you're on this Chiefs team, there's a fair amount of talent around him on both sides of the ball now. If you're playing like this and your team starts dropping games, maybe you finish the year like 10-6, 11-5, because I'm not exactly sure how long this team can keep winning if he plays like this. It seems to be working for now, but that could be due to luck or just variance or something else. And so I think it'll be really interesting to watch and see how this plays out for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that maybe one way you can beat this Chiefs team is by getting a cheaper quarterback and developing them. And I think we've seen that around the league this year. The development of older, more veteran QBs has been really prevalent this year. Guys like Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, and the Steelers QBs have really shined this year. Darnold and Baker have posted career highs in passer rating. Geno Smith is number 1 in passing yards. And these guys were wrote off as potential busts and signed for new teams and now are performing at a really high level. Even Justin Fields, who's a little bit younger, really turned it around with the Steelers, even though he's now on the bench. He was 4-2 even with the Steelers, even though he was 11-29 with the Bears. He only threw 1 interception and 5 touchdowns. To turn around your career that quickly, even though you're now on the bench, is pretty impressive just by a change of scenery. And I guess that makes me wonder, what do we do with these younger guys who are getting benched right now? Looking at Bryce Young, who's just getting back in because Andy Dalton's hurt. Will Levis, injured, but also on the bench right now. Anthony Richardson just got benched. And we have other struggling QBs like Daniel Jones, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, and Kenny Pickett. All high-priced draft picks, but all really disappointing in their current situations. So I guess I'm curious as to how we are evaluating and developing QBs right now, because it seems like these older guys are thriving at a much higher level than the younger guys are.
I think with the NFL entering an era where quarterbacks are being drafted at younger and younger ages, and they're being more taken on talent than their actual production, if I were a team, what I would be doing even if I got a guy like Anthony Richardson, you know, generational arm talent, incredible athleticism, I would start out sitting him probably at least a year. The NFL seems to be transitioning into a time where backup quarterbacks and veterans can always just come in and put up good performances. We just saw Jameis Winston this past week threw for like 303 scores. The Browns took down the Ravens. I mean, no one really saw that coming, but it seems like you can always find a guy to fill in. And I think it's more damaging to these young guys to play and play poorly and then get benched and be rotating in and out of the lineup than it is to just have them sit until they're actually ready and then get into the game. So definitely from my perspective, if I was running a team, say the Colts, maybe the Panthers, something like that, I'm just letting my young guys sit until I'm fully confident they're ready, until I actually give them some weapons and a chance to win some games or even perform well.
Thank you for that, Andrew Fox. And now, crayon eaters, rejoice. It is time for a little more TikTok brain rot on 96.1 Against the Grain. So Julian just led a phenomenal trivia segment. I want to go into a game you've probably seen before now. It is called Imposter. So in this game, our contestants will be Julian, Brandon, Ian, and Max. I sent 3 out of 4 of them the name of an NFL player, with the imposter not receiving any name at all. The group will then go around taking turns saying one word or phrase to try to describe the player. The goal of our participant who knows the word is to identify who the imposter is, while the imposter is trying to avoid detection while trying to figure out the player. We're going to do 3 rounds max. After that point, the non-imposters will be forced to take a vote. If they find out who the imposter will then have a chance to take a guess at who the player is. So, if everyone gets how the game works, I'm going to give us a little starter clue just in case the imposter goes first. So, with that, I will say questionable.
Tall.
Sporadic.
Blind.
Sneaky athletic.
Positive.
Hot prospect.
Heisman winner.
Good offense.
Inspirational.
Top draft pick.
Interceptions.
Mistake prone.
Funny.
Fall off.
Saints.
Head coach.
I think the okay, imposter.
We all got it.
It's definitely Julian.
It's definitely
over here.
Julian.
What in the world is making y'all think that I'm the imposter, bro? Okay, whatever.
Head coach.
Head coach?
I didn't realize Jameis Winston was a head coach of a football team.
Yeah, but guess who he got fired at the end of last season? Brandon. Arthur Smith. Imposter wins.
But first, before we get into our next segment, let's hear a word from our PSAs and promotions. Ever get sick of listening to men? In 2021, only 23% of artists on the Billboard Hot 100 chart were women. Only 3.4% of all music producers are women. And there has been little change over time for female artists. Only 22% of artists across 10 years and 1,000 songs on Billboard Hot 100 were women. Babe Waves is a show that lifts up women, femme, and non-binary artists who don't get as much playtime as men. That's Babe Waves, every Wednesday from 10 to 11 p.m. on K-True Rice Radio. Tune in. Studies show that owning a pet reduces stress and improves overall mental health. At El Gato Charities, Houston's own cat cafe, you have the opportunity to do yoga with cats, painting with cats, or just relax with lots of lovable kittens that are all available for adoption. Visit elgatocharities.org to find a new best friend.
You want to support the cats just like you support us here at KTRU 96.1 FM. You're listening to the first ever episode of Against the Grain, where we talk all about the sports going on around the hedges of our Rice University campus and in the greater city of Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, I was here at the beginning, and now I'm back. I'm here with Garrett Lowe, and we are going to be talking about Rice men's basketball. We were going to maybe do both men's and women's basketball today. We decided that was far too much to unpack in one segment, so we are going to kick the women's segment down to next episode so we have time to dig into both. A lot of interesting stuff on the men's side, especially because of the coaching change. We went from Scott Pera, who was here for 7 seasons, and after an abysmal 11-21 season last year, he is out, and Rob Lanier out of SMU, Southern Methodist, is here. So, Garrett, what can you tell us about this coaching change?
Well, I'm a big fan of the coaching change. First thing I want to get into, though, is giving you guys a little bit idea of what the Pera era was here like at Rice. So Ian mentioned it. We went 11-21 last year, abysmal season. Before that, 19-16, 16-17, 15-13, 15-17, 13-19, and 7-24 in his first year. So in 7 seasons, Coach Pera led. His best record was 19-16, and 2022-2023, undoubtedly the best Rice roster ever, or not ever assembled, but assembled under Scott Pera. You had Quincy Olivari, you had Travis Evie, Cam Sheffield now at Duke, Max Fiedler now on a two-way contract with the Sixers, Makai Mason, who's about to start for Washington University.
He's a freak athlete.
He is a monster, dude. I cannot
he's
say.
So underrated, actually.
When you watch him play, it's like he's gliding on the court. It's genuinely so satisfying.
He throws the ball around so well. He has crazy athleticism. I thought, honestly, he played better than some of those other guys a lot of the time. And I'm surprised he didn't have more power offers as someone who just watched a lot of Rice basketball when he was here.
Oh, no, I'm in complete agreement. I honestly thought watching Makai last year and especially in the preseason, I thought this was a guy who would have a shot at being, you know, in the NBA this year and coming out of college early. I know for a fact, like the Knicks, a few other NBA teams, like were keeping tabs on him, were monitoring Makai. He was unbelievable. But that's just another example of what Rice was like under Scott Pera. We had a lot of incredible talent. Yeah. And what did we get out of it, Ian?
You know, I was going to actually ask you about this because, like you mentioned, you kind of went through it in reverse order, but there was a lot of steady improvement over his time here. And that was something that, as a fan, kept me optimistic for a long time, right? Like, he comes over, he took over a 23-12 team, and he went 7-24 in his first year. So that's obviously not exactly cause for optimism. But then, you know, then he had 13 wins, then he had 15 wins, then he had 16 wins, then he had 19 wins. We're over 500. We have a really star-studded roster. Like, how, you know, do you think that was kind of a facade or an illusion that he was, you know, because that's kind of a sign of productive coaching and program building. How accurately do you think that represents the Pera era?
No, I think we do need to show some respect to Scott Pera. He's not a bum. He's not someone who shouldn't have ever been a D1 coach. I mean, there was a steady improvement. He's obviously an elite recruiter, probably one of the better guys in college basketball at getting talent to a program like Rice. However, I think it is a little bit of a facade in the sense of his ability to elevate that talent and then get any meaningful postseason results out of it. Because, yeah, we see a couple added wins every year, a little bit of marginal growth, but then what happens in the conference tournament? What happens in the NIT, which we also never made? We never made the NCAA tournament under Scott Pera. Rice has never made the NCAA tournament ever on the men's side, which is just unbelievable. For those who are on audio, Brandon has a shocked look on his face, but I promise you that is true. Never once in, I think, 65 plus years of having a program have we made the NCAA tournament. And Pera, he failed miserably at getting us to that goal. I mean, for us to make it, we're not going to get an at-large bid unless we have an unbelievable season. So what it really comes down to is winning the conference, winning previously CUSA, and now winning the American. Last year, we went 11-21. We got smoked by Wichita State in the first round of the conference tournament as the 13 seed.
I was also going to say that I think the lack of postseason success is kind of a symptom of a larger problem about the inability to close big games.
Yeah.
That's a big thing that you think about. Like, that's something that kind of gets isolated and exploited almost. If that's a weakness of yours as a team in like a conference tournament, is like, you know, you're going to be matched up like evenly, like especially, you know, when you're in a situation Rice is where it's like a 10 versus 11 seed deal. It's going to be a close game. It's going to be a fight to the buzzer. And that depends on like coaching and really good kind of drawing up of plays and leadership to kind of close those kind of things out. And that was something that Pera kind of historically struggled with.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree, Ian. I mean, I think close games and big games are what really reveals the coaching scheme and the culture built by a head coach like Pera.
Culture is a big one there, too.
Culture is a big one. In any regular season game, you know, if the culture is weaker, we can simply just out-talent a team. We can have a good shooting night. We can get a little bit of luck to go our way. When it comes down to the postseason, it comes down to the conference tournament, that's when the cracks in the foundation really start to show. That's when a lack of trust between players and coaches really start to show, when you have 3 weeks or not 3 weeks, but 2 weeks-ish to dedicate towards scheming for one opponent, trusting your teammates, and trying to build out the perfect game plan to take them down. When you don't have full faith in your coach, when you don't have full faith in the game plan, and when you don't have full faith in your teammates, those things start to fall apart. And obviously, you know, I won't say people didn't have any trust in Para, but I think there was a little bit of that. I mean, you talk about a guy like Sam Alagiki. We got a transfer from Cal. We thought he was going to be awesome. Suspended for a year last year due to issues with Scott Para. You talk about Siri Lewis, came in from Kansas State. Another athletic freak, what, 6'9", 240, was a four-star or three-star out of high school. This was a guy we thought could be amazing for the program, help us turn it around. He was on that team with Quincy and Max and Travis. He barely plays. We cannot get him to fit into the culture. We can't absorb a guy who might have some character issues and turn him around into a positive winning player.
Right. And I think Para is obviously a fierce competitor, and he obviously tried to instill that in guys. But anyone who, like, you did not have to watch a lot of Rice basketball to kind of just see the culture and the attitude that was kind of being adopted on the bench. I mean, he's got at least 5 technical fouls, I think, every year he was here. He was constantly arguing with the refs. Like, you couldn't watch 10 minutes of Rice basketball without seeing him argue with the refs.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm sure that, like my parents, like, occasionally tune into, like, a couple games here and there. I'm sure they saw him argue with the refs, like, several times. And that's just not – when you have, like, young guys who – especially that you've picked up, like you were mentioning, from the transfer portal who are supposed to be kind of hot talents and you need to bring them together and kind of build up a scheme for them. Like, that's not the kind of level-headed leadership that you're looking for at a program like Rice.
Yeah, certainly not. I don't think Para ever did a great job of inspiring confidence with the refs or with players in the transfer portal, even though he brought in some good guys. Quick couple of things we're going to hit rapid fire on before we talk about Lanier. I just want to give you guys an idea of some of the schematic issues of Para's teams. If you ever watch a Rice basketball game, you're probably pretty familiar with our defense sucks.
Oh, it was so bad.
In the 7 years under Para, I took a look at more advanced analytics, breaking down, you know, what percentile our defense falls into. The best we ever finished was the 37th percentile, below average. We were almost in the bottom third in our best year as a defense. Last year, we were in the 9th percentile, bottom 10% of all teams in college basketball. I mean, some of the seasons we had really good defenders. We had the personnel to put out a team that could compete on defense and be at least average, if not above average. I mean, Trey Murphy, a guy who just got $130 million extension in the NBA, was here. One of the best defenders in the National Basketball Association was here for 2 years. Our defense sucked with him on the team.
And the other thing is that with the, especially if you think about the 22-23 team that made it over 500, you had so many scorers and so many guys who like played the ball and spread the floor really well on the offensive end that like the defensive standard did not need to be like crazy high for that to be a winning team.
Exactly. That was the hallmark of Scott Para basketball. We're not going to beat you up defensively. If we're going to win a game, it's probably going to be in the high 70s, low 80s. That's what we're shooting for. That 2022-2023 team, you had Travis, who was averaging over 15. You had Quincy, who was averaging over 15. You had Makai, who was giving you 12 a night, but could have some bursts for 20-plus if he got going.
Like, it felt like every time I went to a game, he dropped like 22. Like,
Anytime you watch Travis play, you think he's probably over 20 points, just because of how smooth he is on the court. But yeah, overall, not a great culture built by Para, a lot of defensive failures, and then that brings us to the new head coaching hire this past spring. We heard it, Rob Lanier from SMU. Ian, what do you think?
Well, I think this is really interesting. I'm going to kick it. I know this is not normally, you know, super Rice focused, but I think this is like a very interesting way to look at kind of the broader landscape that college athletics has gone to, because SMU is kind of they kind of stand out in terms of like the way their program fits into the new NIL and conference realignment situation. Obviously, there have been a ton of huge changes in college athletics recently. Anyone who's following sports is aware of some of those. SMU has crazy NIL money. They have more money going around than I think a lot of like Power 5 programs do. I don't know off the top of my head. I'm like very confident that's true.
That is very true.
Yes. Yeah. And so when you think about, you know, now that they're moving to the ACC, really good now and a very historically good basketball conference, the standard that they wanted to set for a coach, I think they just like very drastically elevated, and they have the money to just go out and get whoever they want. And that was, I think that's kind of the reason that got Lanier out. I think if Lanier is at a program of a similar caliber, like any other program of a similar caliber with the same performance he had, he stays there. What do you think about that?
No, I think that's a good point, Ian. I mean, what he's referencing there is that Lanier was head coach at SMU for the past 2 years, and they moved on from him despite going 20-12 last year and looking like a top 30 team in the nation at some time.
Beginning of the season especially, they were looking really good. I feel like they kind of fell off.
Yeah, they looked unbelievable. I have it in here. They started off the season 19-7, closed the year 1-4 in conference play, lose in the first round in the AAC tournament, and then lose in the NIT. Yeah, so really poor string of events to close the season. And I think that's something that, you know, the SMU AD, the board, is probably wasn't too sad to see because they wanted to bring in a bigger name. Lanier has had past success. He's coached under guys like Billy Donovan, Rick Barnes, people who have been in the NBA, people who have been high-profile D1 coaches. Rick Barnes, obviously, at Tennessee right now.
Really successful there, perennial program.
Exactly. Awesome program the past few years. But when you move to the ACC, you can bring in almost whoever you want.
Especially with their budget.
Yeah, exactly. So who does SMU bring in? They bring in Andy Enfield, who had been the coach at USC for the last 10 years. He's made it deep into the NCAA tournament before. I think they've made it to the Elite Eight with one of the Mobleys, right?
Yeah. Was that the Evan Mobley?
That was the Evan Mobley
team. That was like
team.
2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And Yeah.
Yeah, great team. Yeah. So Andy Enfield, obviously a great coach. I know I don't think I can testify to the fact that Lanier is arguably better than him. However, I don't think it necessarily signals poorly for us as Rice basketball that we got the scraps, that Lanier is a second-tier kind of guy.
I think that the fact that he's coached under guys like Rick Barnes and Billy Donovan and been involved at, like, really high-caliber D1 programs like that have had, like, NCAA tournament success is a big kind of – it's easy to overlook, but I don't think we should – as terms of, like, a differentiating factor between him and Para, because Para had kind of crawled his way up from the ranks a little bit, and this was his, like – big mid-major D1 breakthrough, whereas like this is a guy who's been like seen how the game is played at the highest level. He's seen how the college athletics landscape has evolved in a variety of places. He's been under coaches who built really successful schemes, and that's kind of a different approach that I think we took to in almost a hiring.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you look at Para's resume before getting to Rice. Where had he been? He rose to national prominence when he coached James Harden in high school at one of the prep schools out in California.
Right, that's almost what he was most known for, was high school coaching.
That is what he was most known for. I mean, when James Harden was sitting out at the beginning of the year last year for the Sixers, where was he? I maybe shouldn't have said this, actually, but he was here at Rice's campus participating in Rice's practices, which is also against NCAA regulations. All right, don't leak that info. But Para's resume, I mean, before getting to Rice, where was he? So he follows James Harden to Arizona State, where he's an assistant for a couple of years, and then he serves as an assistant at a couple of Ivy schools, I think Brown and Cornell, and then he comes into Rice with no head coaching experience whatsoever to take over a program that, you know, has aspirations and was doing really well before him under Mike Rhodes, who's now at Penn State, a high-profile coach.
Right.
Versus you think about Rob Lanier. Okay, this guy in the early 2000s, he was the head coach at Siena. He made the NCAA tournament with them, got fired after a couple of years when the program took a downturn, but he made the NCAA tournament with Siena. I don't know where Siena is. I don't know if anyone knows where Siena is.
I don't think Siena's had tournament success in recent history, I would recognize the name.
I would argue not. And then after that, where does he go? He gets scooped up immediately by Billy Donovan at Florida, a program that had just come off back-to-back national championship.
That was a crazy basketball dynasty.
Exactly.
Like one of the best ever.
An incredible winning culture. He's brought into that immediately. After that, where does he go? He goes to Rick Barnes with Tennessee, another great perennial winning program. And then he goes to Georgia State these past couple of years, where he again makes the tournament, and not only makes the tournament, he won a game. Yes, it was in the first four, and which then allowed them to get kicked by Gonzaga, but he did make the NCAA tournament and get a win. Lanier has a much better resume than what Para could ever, you know, compete with when getting here.
I fully agree with you, Garrett, and since we are starting to get a little bit crunched for time on our basketball breakdown here on Against the Grain on K3 96.1 FM, I was wondering, how do you think, what kind of style of ball do you think the team is going to play? And a little quick, who are you thinking going to be a few key players on that roster? Give us a quick rapid fire that we can look for in our first couple of games watching Rice basketball.
Absolutely. The name of the game this year is going to be defense. Rice basketball is looking to punish offenses. This is going to be a really stout team. A couple of quick starters to go through. We got Trey Broadnax, graduate transfer, 6'4". He's going to be the point guard of this team. He's going to be the offensive initiator. He averaged 14 points a game last year at University of South Carolina Upstate. Solid shooter. Good passer, going to be a really good defender. This guy has great athleticism. He is very large for a point guard, very built. If you go to a game and see him in person, you might confuse him for a bodybuilder. Trey is going to be an impact player for sure in the starting five. Going to the two spot, we're going to have Emery Lanier, Rob's son. But another,
did he come from SMU?
He did come from SMU, yeah. But a great player in his own right. He won 2 state championships in high school while not being coached by his father. He was... 6'4", 190, really good shooter, solid on-ball defender, another good player to contribute. I think a bit of a wild card for the team then is going to be Kellen Amos, 6'7", grad transfer from Connecticut State, really good shooter. He struggled last year with efficiency a little bit, but I think this is a guy who has the potential to create a lot for the Rice basketball team, who could go for 20 any given night and maybe lead us to a win through his scoring punch.
All right. The big, sorry to cut you off. We have about 1 minute left. Our big question, though, with all this potential, will it manifest? Will it stack up in the American? Will games be won? Will noise be made? Will the Rice Owls be the talk of the town come January, come February?
Ian, I hate to give you a pessimistic answer after cutting that promo on how I think this Rice basketball team has a lot of solid impact players. I do not see it making a huge difference this year. It's really hard to field a good team when you bring in almost exclusively transfers. Our starting five is going to be all transfers. It takes time to rebuild a program. I don't think Lanier's coming in looking to get a win immediately and then bolt elsewhere. He's looking to build a culture. He's looking to build something sustainable. So this year, yes, we might find ourselves at the bottom of the AAC come springtime, but I think in the future, the outlook is very positive.
It's a tough AAC too.
It is a good AAC. Memphis is obviously having some struggles right now, but you have a lot of programs that have had recent success. Yeah, you have South Florida. You have Florida Atlantic. There are a lot of good teams
UAB
in this conference.
And North Texas have been really good.
Exactly. I mean, this isn't a conference where you're just going to see one team, the winner, make it into the NCAA tournament. There will certainly be an at-large bid or two, which also gives, you know, Rice a little bit more hope in the coming years if we're able to put together a good record.
All right. So against the grain fans, don't be too turned down by Garrett's pessimistic outlook there for the season, because we've got a few more predictions coming up for you for key matchups for the week. So we're going to kick it over to Julian, and our whole team is going to break those down to close out the hour for you. You're listening to Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM.
All right. All right. All right. Thank you, boys, for that great Rice basketball segment. As we move on to our predictions segment to close off the show. So every week on Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1, we will have a prediction segment to close off the show, where we will look at a couple of key games in the upcoming days and of the week, and each of us will make predictions for winners and losers predictions for these games. We will keep track of all of our prediction scores, and we will tally them up at the end of the respective seasons. So for this segment, we have all members of our team. We have myself, Julian. We have Garrett. We have Chloe, David, Max, Ian, Andrew, and Brandon. I will start us off with tonight's game. Big matchup on Thursday Night Football between the Texans and the Jets. As I alluded to earlier, it's a bad matchup for the Texans. I'm taking the Jets. Garrett?
Just like he dodges vaccines, he's going to dodge a loss tonight. Give me the Jets and Aaron Rodgers.
Wow, Chloe? I cannot believe such strong Jets sentiments right now. As a Jets fan, I know not to pick them. So I'm winning either way. A Jets win's a win, and a Texan win's a win. So give me the Texans. David.
You know, I may not believe in the Texans, but I definitely don't believe in the Jets. Let's go Texans. Max.
I think my dad will like this one, so I'm going to go with the Jets.
The Jets have not shown me that they can beat bad teams, and I'm higher on the Texans than some of the people in this room. I think they're a pretty good team, so I'm taking the Texans tonight. Andrew?
It's Halloween, and Sauce Gardner is going to terrorize CJ Stroud. Give me the Jets.
Brandon?
J-E-T-S. Texans, Texans, Texans are winning in New York on Thursday Night Football.
Yep, that is a Jets fan, by the way. Okay, as we move on to our next important game of the week, we have Mavs-Rockets in an all-Texas NBA matchup. Luka Doncic might be the best player in the league. I will take the Dallas Mavericks. Sorry, Houston. Garrett?
It's not a maybe. He is the best player in the NBA. Give me Luka Doncic and the Mavs. Chloe?
All signs say pick the Mavs, so I will pick the Rockets. David?
Better team, best player, no other reason. Let's go Mavs.
Best player in the league, give me the Mavs.
The Mavs made the finals, then improved their roster. The Rockets are promising but still developing. I think the Mavs take this one easy.
Kyrie has voodoo magic, give me the Mavs.
Brandon?
I agree with that, give me the Mavs.
Okay, and to close off our predictions segment and the show, we have our final important game of the week between the Packers and the Lions in an NFC North heavyweight matchup. Lions are probably favoring this game. Jordan Love's coming off an injury, but the Lions celebrated Halloween a little too hard. If you've seen the NFL Instagram, I will take the Green Bay Packers. Garrett?
Jared Goff. No further comment. Chloe?
This one's shaping up to be a shootout. I trust the Lions a lot more in a shootout. They have the best offense in this one. Give me the Lions. David?
The Lions have been on a tear. Simple as that. Max?
The Lions are just having too much fun beating everyone. Give me the Lions.
At this point in the season, the Lions might be my pick to win the Super Bowl. I'm not going to, you know, pick against them with the team that's playing their backup quarterback in Malik Willis. I like the Packers, but give me the Lions.
Jared Goff is throwing 4 touchdowns. Give me the Lions.
I think future Jets head coach Ben Johnson and the Lions are going to get it done pretty easily against the Packers.
All right. It'll be exciting to see who at the end of the season has the worst of these prediction records. My bets are on Andrew Fox across the table. Thank you so much for listening to our inaugural episode of Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1. Have a great week, Houston.
Make sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at KTRU Sports on all platforms.
Yes, absolutely. We want to get the word out. All right. Thanks for listening.